Good morning. I'm Kerry Amos, worship pastor here at First West. We're so happy to have you with us joining in our service today. If you'd like to check out more about what's going on here at First West, please check out our website, firstwest.cc. Again, thank you for being with us.
Hello. Hope you're doing well today. Thank you for being with us. If you're here in the room or watching online or by TV, and I want to introduce you to one of my friends. I'm going to ask one of my friends, Colton, to come out here. And he is going to bring my other friend named Ellie. Come on, Ellie. Come on, girl. Yeah, that's how you do it, Colton. Just bear hug her. All right. Everyone say, hi, Ellie. All right. Come here, Ellie. Come here. Yeah, come on. Come on. Come on, let's be friends. Come on. Come on, let's stand right here. All right, this is Ellie. Yeah, thank you for not shouting, hi, Ellie, so she didn't go nuts, all right? Ellie's a sheep, a real live sheep. And can I tell you, I know nothing about sheep or how to take care of them. And I've seen Jack Hanna enough times on TV to know this could go terribly wrong at any moment. But you know, sheep, they don't play a central role in our culture like they did in Jesus' time. Right, for Jesus and that culture in that time, sheep were everywhere. Shepherds were everywhere. Right? I mean, just imagine if you were to roll up for church today and you brought your personal flock of sheep and we had a pen out in the parking lot. You put your sheep in the pen and then you came to church, and then when it was time to leave, you went to the pen and you called your sheep by name and they followed you and went home. Right? I mean, I guess we kind of have that in the nursery, kind of the same deal, but but not the same. But today we're going to be talking about Jesus as the good shepherd. And so I wanted you to get to see Ellie and to meet Ellie, because today we're going to talk about how we're sheep, just like Ellie. So Colton, come get her, buddy. I appreciate you. And can I tell you, I've been anxious all weekend on how this moment was going to go, and Ellie has nailed it. So Colton, thank you, buddy. Got her? All right. We don't need that anymore, I don't think. All right. Take your Bible and go with me to John chapter 10. John chapter 10, and we're going to see what Jesus is going to say about who he is, right? We're in this series. We've been in this series. We took a little interruption last week, but we've been in this series called I Am, of looking at the seven statements in the book of John where Jesus clearly communicates who he is. So you don't have to take anyone else's word for it. Jesus clearly lined out who he was, all right? And what we're going to look at today in John chapter 10 is he is going to say, I am the good shepherd. I'm the good shepherd. Now, John chapter 10, obviously, it's coming right on the heels of John chapter 9. Now, when John originally wrote this, he didn't write it and include chapters and verses. It was just one long letter. And so we see clearly that John chapter 10 is very closely connected to John chapter 9. In John chapter 9, when that chapter ends, Jesus is in a conversation with the Pharisees, the religious elite, the leaders of the Jewish faith in that time. All right? And so let's look and see what Jesus is going to say to these Pharisees. Look in verse 1. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him, the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all of his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of the strangers. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. First thing I want us to see this morning is this, is that Jesus is going to communicate here. He is the rightful shepherd. He is the rightful shepherd. Some believe that this moment, as it was taking place, that there could have been shepherds actually leading their sheep to the pen. And as Jesus saw that, he took that moment to begin this conversation about a shepherd and the sheep. But even if that's not the case, we see that shepherds played a major role in God's relationship with his people. We hear names like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Moses and David, many other names that you would maybe recognize from people in the Bible, and they were actually shepherds. But not only that people played the role of a shepherd, that God would so often give this ongoing picture of his relationship with his people as a shepherd and sheep. In Psalm 100, verse 3, it says, "Know that the Lord, he is God. It is he who made us, and we are his, for we are his people and the sheep of his pasture." So there was this understanding that God is the shepherd and we are the sheep. And God would go kind of to another step when he would kind of give that title of shepherd to those that were leading his people. We see it in the Old Testament. We also see it in the New Testament for pastors, the idea of an under-shepherd. In the Old Testament, we saw times where there were shepherds that weren't so great shepherds. They did not lead the people well as God would have desired in Jeremiah chapter 23, verse 1. It says, "Woe to the shepherds who destroy and scatter the sheep of my pasture." But there were these false shepherds who were coming in for their own personal gain. And so we see here in this context, as Jesus is talking to these Pharisees in John chapter 9 and continues here in John chapter 10, we see the picture of these same false shepherds that are doing the exact same. The Pharisees continued this tradition of destroying and scattering the sheep. These Pharisees, they were more about self-promotion and keeping religious rituals for personal gain than pointing the hearts of the people towards God. I mean, we see in Luke chapter 16 that the Pharisees were covetous. We see in Mark chapter 12, verse 40, that the Pharisees took advantage of poor widows. Matthew 21, we see where the Pharisees had turned the temple into a den of thieves. In fact, one chapter over in John chapter 11, we're going to see where the Pharisees actually plotted to kill Jesus so that Rome wouldn't take away their personal privileges. So this idea of being a false shepherd, or the way that Jesus is going to say it here, a thief or a robber, there's some connection here to what has happened throughout the Bible. But Jesus is going to clearly communicate in this moment that he and he alone is the rightful shepherd. He is the ultimate shepherd that the Old Testament had been pointing towards. We see in Ezekiel chapter 34, as the beginning of that chapter, again, God is dealing with these false shepherds or these thieves and robbers who were leading the sheep astray. In verse 23, God said this, "I will set up over them one shepherd, my servant David, and he shall feed them. He shall feed them and be their shepherd." When he speaks of David here, it's a prefigure of Christ, of saying that, hey, Christ is going to be the ultimate shepherd for the sheep. And as Jesus is having this conversation with the Pharisees here, he lays out the nature of the rightful shepherd. We see it tells us here in verse 3, "To him the gatekeeper opens." Some people believe that the gatekeeper there is the Holy Spirit. Others say maybe it's John the Baptist. It's not a point of strong importance for us this morning, but it's just interesting. He says, listen, "For the rightful shepherd, the gatekeeper opens the door." It's a picture that the shepherd has gone away, but when he returns, the doorkeeper, the gatekeeper, understands that that is the shepherd that these sheep belong to and opens the door and allows him in. It says that for the rightful shepherd, the sheep hear his voice. He calls them by name. He leads them out. And then it says that he goes before him and the sheep follow him because they know the rightful shepherd's voice. But what does he say here about the thief and the robber? What does he say about these false shepherds? Well, it tells us that in verse 1 that they have to climb in another way. This would have been a pen of made of stone, probably 6 to 8 feet tall, would have had possibly thorn bushes over the top of it. But he's saying, hey, for these people, they have to climb in over the walls. And notice what he says in verse 5 about the strangers. A stranger, the sheep will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of the strangers. Here's what's interesting is that for him to say these things specifically to the Pharisees, that this is coming, this conversation is coming right after a prime example of what he's talking about. In John chapter 9, we see a man who was blind from birth. And Jesus comes and he heals the man and he can see again. And when he goes home, his neighbors, they see him and they cannot believe it, that this man who was blind can now see. And so the neighbors, they say, we have to take this man to the Pharisees. We have to take him to the religious leaders because our friend was blind, but now he can see. And as he gets there to the Pharisees don't receive this man with awe and wonder, but they receive him with questions. They receive him with doubts. Begin to say, who did this? Who do you think did this? And he says, well, Jesus did. And they continue to press on so much so that they go to the man's parents and they say to him, hey, was your son truly blind? And it says that his parents, they understood what was at stake. They understood that if this was the case, that the Pharisees would throw this man out of the synagogue. So the parents said to the Pharisees, said, hey, you're just going to have to ask him yourself. They knew it to be the case, but they were fearful that their son would be thrown out of the synagogue. So they said, you're going to have to ask him yourself. So the Pharisees come back to this man who Jesus has healed. And they said, is this the case? And the man says it is. And it says that the Pharisees removed this man. They cast him out of the synagogue. Now, I want you to listen. Coming right out of this man being cast out of the synagogue by the Pharisees. Listen in chapter 9, verse 35. It says, Jesus had heard that they had cast him out. And having found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? And he answered, and who is he, sir, that I may believe in him? And Jesus said to him, you have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you. And the man said, Lord, I believe, and he worshiped him. See, it's a clear picture of what Jesus has been saying. Listen, the rightful shepherd, the sheep know him. And they know his voice, and they follow him. But the thieves and the robbers, the strangers, the sheep don't follow him. We've just seen this thing take place. They threw this sheep out of the synagogue, but the sheep knew the shepherd's voice, and he followed. One commentary said this, I thought it was interesting. Sheep follow the shepherd. It is the butcher who drives them. And I ask you today, are there areas in your life you hear that voice and you're following it, but it's not the voice of a shepherd, it's the voice of the butcher. As we're going to see here in a moment, the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but Jesus comes to get life, to give life. Are there things in your life that you're pursuing that you assume to be the shepherd leading you, but the reality is it is the butcher that is leading you to destruction? You see, the Bible says that God has laid eternity in the hearts of all men. It means when we ask that question, who am I? Why am I here? Why does all of this exist? That there is a stirring in our soul that's asking this question. Who is my shepherd? Who is my shepherd? What is the voice that I will follow with this one life that I have been given? But you see, for the Pharisees, they didn't catch it. Look in verse 6. It says, this figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus goes the next step. Look in verse 7. So Jesus again said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. Picture here is, and you may be familiar with this, but when the shepherds, when they had their sheep out in the pasture, and nighttime came and there wasn't a chance to return to their pen, that there would be these areas in the pasture. It would be a kind of like a circle with one small gap in it, the only way in and out. And the shepherd would lead his sheep into this fold, and then as night came, the shepherd would sleep right there in that area. The shepherd would serve as the door to keep the sheep in and to keep the enemy out. So when Jesus says here, I am the door of the sheep, the door here equals access. The door equals access. He's saying this, that I am the life-giving shepherd. I am the way unto salvation. We know that Jesus is going to make that I am statement later on of saying, I am the way and the truth and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through me. But here he uses this picture of the door, that I am the door. And notice what he says about the door. He says, if anyone enters by me, and several things he's going to say here. The first one is this, the sheep will be saved. Because he is the door, the life-giving shepherd, those that enter through that door, those sheep will be saved. Those sheep will be delivered. We know that this is how God has always dealt with his people. Right? If you remember back to when God's people were in Egypt, right? And the plagues came, and the last one was the death angel, and God instructed them that they were to take the blood of a lamb and they were to spread it over the doorpost. And so when the death angel came through, when it saw the blood of the lamb that it covered the door, that it would pass over, and that family would be saved. You may not know this story, but maybe you do, in 2 Chronicles chapter 20. We see this picture of Jehoshaphat, who's the king, and he discovers that the Ammonites and the Moabites are coming after them. And it says that he became very afraid. He understood what was at stake, that these people were coming after the people of God. In fact, he gathered all of Judah to him. And listen to what he said. He said, "For we are powerless against this great horde that is coming against us." And then that famous line, "We do not know what to do, but our eyes are on you." Right? He's in this place saying, "God, the Ammonites and the Moabites are coming, and we are powerless. We have no hope. We have no game plan. The reality is they are coming, and we are afraid." And God sends a messenger to the people. And listen to what he says. It's not going to be on the screen, so listen. I want you to listen well. This is what the messenger said. He said, "Listen, all Judah and inhabitants of Jerusalem and King Jehoshaphat, thus saith the Lord to you, do not be afraid. Do not be dismayed at this great horde, for the battle is not yours, but God's. You will not need to fight in this battle. Stand firm, hold your position, and see the salvation of the Lord on your behalf, O Judah and Jerusalem. Do not be afraid. Do not be dismayed. Tomorrow, you go out against them, and the Lord will be with you." You know what's happening in this moment? As Jehoshaphat and Judah, they are scared out of their minds because the Ammonites and the Moabites are coming, and they feel powerless, that God steps into that moment, and here's what he says. "Sheep, don't be afraid. The shepherd's got this. Sheep, don't be afraid. You stand back and you watch the salvation of the Lord take place." I think many of us in here, we have found moments in our life where we feel like Jehoshaphat, right? We've had those moments where we feel powerless. We feel so overwhelmed. And maybe it's not just by a situation in your life. Maybe you felt powerless and maybe you felt overwhelmed because you see the nature of your life. I mean, I'm there with you. When I think about one day standing before a holy, perfect God and I begin to look at my past, I begin to look at the mistakes and the mishaps. I look at the sin in my life, the things that I've said, the things that I've looked at, the things that I've done. I see that rap sheet and I look at God and say, "God, here I am. I am powerless against this great horde that is my past." And the great shepherd looks down on my life and he looks down on your life and he says this, "Don't be afraid. Don't be dismayed, for this battle is not yours." Jesus is the life-giving shepherd. Finally, for those that go into the door, not only are they saved, it says that the sheep will go in and out and find pasture. They'll find pasture. And he goes on here in verse 10, right? The thief. Now, so often when we've heard this verse, we immediately go to our adversary, the devil, right? But the immediate context of what he's speaking to here is to the Pharisees. So when he says here that the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy, here's what he's saying to the Pharisees. Your lives are about stealing and killing and destroying people. Now we know that, yes, this verse is absolutely true of our adversary. That is his desire to steal, kill, and destroy. But he says the thief does that. But this shepherd, he comes to give life and give it abundant. Jesus brings life. When I think about this idea, just as I've tried to process it, I just keep getting this image of a bike. That we jump on a bike and we begin to turn those pedals as fast as we can. But you know this, if the chain is not connected, you're not going anywhere, right? I mean, you're spending all the energy in the world. You can pedal as fast as you can. You can have the best technique in the world, but you're not going anywhere. I just have this picture. When Jesus says, "I have come to give you life and life to the full," as the life-giving shepherd, it's that in my life, before Christ, I am simply spinning my wheels. I'm just pedaling. I'm just trying to go. And all of a sudden, when I understand what Jesus means and what Jesus did for me, it's like he walks into my life at the point that I turn from my sin and I put my hope in you, and he drops that chain on the gears, and all of a sudden, life begins to go. And life begins to make sense, and I begin to live out the purpose for which I was created. Jesus is the life-giving shepherd. And not only that, look with me in verse 11. This is where he lays it out so clear. He says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, he sees the wolf coming and he leaves the sheep and he flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. And I lay my life down for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold, and I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock and one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I might take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up. This charge I have received from my Father. Jesus says here, I am the good shepherd. The word that he uses here for good, it's the word for beautiful, for noble, stately, heavenly. He is the heavenly shepherd. He is the beautiful shepherd, not like the hired hand. The hired hand doesn't care for the sheep. The hired hand is all about self, but he says, not me, I'm the good shepherd. My cousin and her husband, they live on a farm in Oklahoma. And when their children were young, they got a calf, a small calf. And it really became the pet to the family. Some of you may have done that before, but it became the pet to the family. The kids named the calf Jimmy Dean. Now, here's what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, that's really weird. They named a calf, which is beef, after Jimmy Dean, which makes sausage out of pork. It gets even worse. The reality is that Jimmy Dean is the name of my uncle, so they named a cow after their grandfather. But they did. Well, this calf obviously grew and grew and grew, and it was still their pet. It was Jimmy Dean. Well, eventually it got to the point where my cousin and her husband, they made the decision that Jimmy Dean couldn't really be around anymore. And so they made the decision to take Jimmy Dean to the butcher. Oh, gosh. It wasn't me. I didn't do it. But so they took Jimmy Dean to the butcher. And so one night they're sitting around the table and they're eating steak. And as you can imagine, they're anxious. I mean, they're anxious about what's this going to look like. And finally, one of their small children said, Mom, Dad, is this Jimmy Dean that we're eating? I said, yeah, it is. They said, he's delicious. That's a true story. True story. Now listen, they felt that anxiety. Why? I mean, they'd had hamburgers before. They had steak before, right? But there was a relationship here to Jimmy Dean. Can I tell you something that you know to be absolutely true? You haven't thought about it today, but you know this to be absolutely true. There will be sheep today that will be slaughtered to provide lamb chops for someone to eat. We know that to be true, right? Okay, we just do. Now let me ask you this. How would you feel if I told you this? Today, Ellie is going to be slaughtered to provide lamb chops for somebody. Now, some of you right now, you want to get out of this room and you want to go find Ellie and save Ellie, right? Why do you feel that way? Because you know Ellie. They felt that anxiousness because they knew Jimmy Dean. Listen, Jesus knows everything about you. Before you were born, Jesus knew you. While you were being formed in the womb, he knew you. He knows your heartaches. He knows your regrets. The woman at the well with her shame-filled past, he knew her. He knew the hopelessness of the woman who had been bleeding for years, and it's been all she had to find a cure, eventually coming to the place of simply reaching out to touch the hem of his garment so that she might be healed. Jesus knew the broken heart of the woman who came to his feet and broke open an alabaster jar and wiped his feet with her hair using her tears in that perfume. Jesus knew the conniving spirit. He knew the deceit in a man named Zacchaeus, through the role of a tax collector, was constantly taking advantage of others. And today, in this moment, whether you're in this room or whether you're watching online or on TV, he knows your deepest, darkest secrets. He knows that anger that you hold in your heart for something that happened to you 20 years ago. He knows the insecurities that you sit in your seat with, or you sit in your living room with, and you're trying to mask it on the outside, but in reality, you know it exists. Jesus knows. He knows you. And this is what makes him the good shepherd. It's not just that he knows that. But even in knowing all that, look at what he does for these sheep. He's going to say it here at least four times in this passage, is that he lays down his life for these sheep. He lays his life down for these sheep. In verse 15, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, I lay down my life for the sheep. In fact, he says it in verse 11, I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Verse 17, for this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I might take it up again. Verse 18, no one takes it from me, but I lay it down. Do you think Jesus is trying to communicate something here? Absolutely. This shepherd lays his life down for the sheep. When we think back to a shepherd in Scripture that we see is David. Do you remember when David, when Goliath had stepped out the Philistine and the Israelites were scared, and David shows up and he says, listen, I'll take him on. Like, wait, David, you can't do that. You remember what he said? I'll read it for you just in case you don't. It says, but David said to Saul, your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock. I went after him and I struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he rose against me, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears. Now listen, I know you're real proud about that deer that hangs on your wall, but David's not impressed. I'm glad you shot him at 200 yards while he was eating corn with your .30-06. But David says, I was a shepherd. And when the lion and the bear came and took the sheep, I chased him down and I struck him. And if he didn't drop the sheep, I grabbed him by his beard and I killed him. I have to say, if a lion or bear came here and got Ellie, I'd be like, peace out, Ellie. It's been fun, right? So we see this picture of the heart of a shepherd. But Jesus says, I don't just protect the sheep, I willingly lay my life down for the sheep. Would you know this morning, young man, young lady, mom, dad, grandparent, young child, teenager, the shepherd has willingly laid his life down for you. He has laid his life down for you. He said it this way, greater love hath no man than this, than one who would lay down his life for his friends. And today, as we celebrate Palm Sunday, as we understand Jesus going to the cross, willingly laying his life down, a public spectacle right there in Jerusalem for all to see, we understand that he was following the plan that had been set forth from the very beginning. Willingly laying his life down for you and me. And I pray that you would sense the weight of that this morning. Hebrews 12:2, it says, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising its shame, and is seated at the right hand of God. This shepherd willingly laid his life down. He endured the cross with joy. Joy in knowing that the Father would receive glory, and joy of knowing that these sheep would experience life. Jesus is the good shepherd because the shepherd took on suffering for the joy of the sheep that they might know life. Amy Carmichael said this, you can give without loving, but you cannot love without giving. And God demonstrated his love for you in this, that while you were a sinner, while you were a sheep full of a past that did not honor him, Christ died for you. So he's a good shepherd. And he's a good shepherd, as we see in verse 18, a good shepherd who is in complete control. He said, I have the authority to lay my life down, and I have the authority to take it up again. As Carrie prayed earlier, the cross was not a moment of tragedy where God was thinking, oh no, what's next? It was simply God unfolding the plan of redemption so that he might redeem sheep that had rebelled against him, that they might know life and joy and forgiveness. This moment that we see, this moment as we go into the Passion Week, as we will gather together next week to celebrate, not just that he laid his life down, but that he said, I had the authority to take it up again. We celebrate and we look to this week knowing that God was not on his heels. He was not reacting to the situation as it presented himself. He had the authority to lay his life down and take it up again. Luke chapter 15. The Pharisees, again, were talking with Jesus. And they made this claim about him. They said, you know, that Jesus, he dines with sinners. This is a man who knows and spends time with and is willing to be seen with dirty sheep. And Jesus said to him, suppose you had 100 sheep. And one of them was lost. Would you not leave the 99 to go and to find the one? You see, we hear that story again and we go, okay, that's nice. But again, let me remind you this morning about Ellie. Right? What if it was Ellie that was lost? The reality is this, is that God looks at sheep and he sees people that are lost. People without a Savior. People that feel defined by their past, feel defined by their hurts and their anger. And Jesus tells us that he's a good shepherd that will willingly leave the 99 so that when he hears about the sheep that has been cast out of the synagogue, what does it say that he did? He found them. He found that sheep. And what did that sheep do when he knew that he had been found? He worshiped. He worshiped because he knew this wasn't just any shepherd. This was the shepherd of his soul. So this morning, as you sit here in this room or you watch online or TV, I ask you, who is the shepherd of your soul? And maybe right now in this moment, it's tempting for you to think, well, I'm the 99. What if you're not? What if you're not? Well, if you're not this morning, know that God loves you. And that he demonstrated that love by giving up his son, the shepherd, to die in your place, to pay the punishment that you deserve, so that you could be forgiven of that sin and that you could be reconciled to him, to know the hope of having life and life abundant in this life, but know the hope and the joy and the confidence that in life to come, you will be with the Good Shepherd. And so this morning, would you bow your heads in this room? And I want to invite you into a moment. For some of you in here, there's never been that time in your life where you turned to the Good Shepherd and you said, God, I'm powerless over my past. I'm powerless over my sin. And so, God, today I'm asking you to save me. I'm asking you to give me life. Jesus said, the sheep, they know my voice. They hear my voice and they follow me. And so maybe right now in the stillness of this moment, that deep down in your soul, you hear the voice of God. God's speaking to you now and saying, follow me. Follow me. Surrender all that you have. Surrender your past. Surrender your hurts. Surrender your hang-ups. Surrender all of that stuff and follow me.
Thanks so much for being with us today. My name is Michael Wood. I'm the lead pastor at First West. We're a church in two locations, in West Monroe, Louisiana, and in Sterlington, Louisiana. It's the heartbeat of our church to see people changed by the gospel and living out their Christ-centered purpose. If there's any way that we can pray for you or serve you, would you please contact us?
You can get more information about our church at firstwest.cc. Thank you.